And good morning. Thank you very much for tuning into the program today. One of the things that I do is I do my very best to take as many questions as possible because I get phone calls all the time about what do I do about this, what do I do about that. And sometimes I got to lay the groundwork or the framework to answer some of the questions because I always have noticed that if a person understands why they are in the situation they're in, then you leave it up to them to decide what they're going to do. Have you ever heard the phrase before that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink? I would say about a third of the time, that's one of the things that I deal with. You can tell a person how to fix themselves, and they may go kicking and screaming and just say, I don't like this. I don't like anything that you're telling me. I want to do it my way. And I'm going, well, that's how you got in the shape that you're in right now. So anyway, let me just try to gently flush some things out that I think are very fascinating and very interesting. And so, you know that the number one taker of life is going to be heart disease. And so much of the information that we get is just based on what drugs do you take? Well, I know you've heard me say this in the past, but that one study that I read from Finland, to me it was so impressive, number one. It demonstrated that if a man just gave blood once every 2 years, that decreased his risk of having a heart attack by 89%. Well, you know as well as I do, there's no drug that can do that. Well, why does that work? Well, if you began to read and study these issues, you'd figure out real quick that men tend to accumulate old, rusted iron. And donating blood is one of the ways that you rid of your body of that. You also, the great benefit, and this is probably more positive, you tend to save lives. Tend to. You probably save an average of 3 persons' lives when you do that. Okay, now this one, I am going to read you this study because I want to. I think I'm doing it for myself, but it's an attitude adjustment. And making sure that I have the right attitude that God wants me to have. So, let me read this to you. Okay, it goes on in this study. Let me see, where does this come from? Maybe from Yale. Young people who have a negative attitude towards old people. I'm not saying that because I'm young. I'm not doing that. I'm just telling you. Just consider this prayerfully. Young people who have a negative attitude towards old people are more likely later in life when they themselves are gray and wrinkled to have a stroke or a heart attack. Well, I think I want to know more about that. A negative view of old age works against you as you age. You see how the chickens come back to roost? This is according to researchers at the Yale School of Public Health discovered. Okay, in the early 1950s, the psychologist Jacob Tuckman and Irving Lorge, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, they designed a questionnaire which measures young people's attitude toward those that are quite elderly. It's called the Attitudes Toward Older People Scale. Respondents have to indicate the extent to which they agree with the statements. So if your answers show that you regard elderly people as thinking slowly, that's kind of a negative comment, I guess, no longer lucid, dependent on care, no longer able to take care of themselves, they're better off just not having any contact with young people, and that you do not feel at ease in their company, then you are a negative age stereotype. Here's another study right here. The Baltimore Longitudinal Study of Aging started in 1968. I'm trying to think, how old was I in 1968? In the United States, researchers surveyed hundreds of people living in Baltimore with an average age of age 36. And they recorded the data and followed the participants for many, many years. This study provided the Yale researchers with the data they desired from almost 400 men and women. So you get it, 400 men and women, 1968, followed them for a long time. And actually, it says, all of whom completed the attitudes toward older people scale back in 1968, then what they did was they followed these participants until the year 2007. That's a long time. As a matter of fact, that's like almost 40 years, isn't it? Okay, here's the results. During this period, 89 of the participants suffered from a cardiovascular event, a stroke, or heart attack. When the researchers divide the participants into people with a positive age stereotype, that means they generally look on older people as something to be regarded with honor and dignity and respect. They don't just brush them off saying, "You're not useful to me, get out of my way." And if you're negative, well, you know how that works. And so that's all they're doing is the graph. I know you can't see a graph, only I can see that. This is radio. And so what they did was they started counting from the year 1968 until when they had their very first cardiovascular event, meaning a clot, a stroke, a heart attack, something related to the cardiovascular system. And so they show those that have a very negative stereotype against the elderly, people that looked at them negatively. Oh my goodness, after about 30 years, they start to drop like a lead balloon. It says the young people who have a negative attitude toward old age are far, far more likely to suffer from a heart attack or a stroke than when they themselves are older. You see what that's saying? You're hurting yourself. You're just messing yourself up with negative talk and negative emotions. What does the Bible say? Here's the point. Do everything without arguing and complaining. Let me think. Which commandment is it? Is it the fourth one? You know, from the Ten Commandments of the Old Testament. Honor thy father and thy mother, that things may go really well with you. That may be like an abbreviation. And of course, the researchers, when they were asked the question, why do people that are negative about the elderly, why do they die from heart attacks and strokes? Researchers speculate they haven't the foggiest reason why. Of course, you and I know that. Get this right here. If I can break down the numbers, maybe these will make sense, and then I'll be done with this article. If an individual's age stereotypes become more negative by just one standard deviation point, then what happens is every time they become a little bit more negative by one deviation point, standard deviation point, that's going to increase the risk of it experiencing a heart attack or a stroke by 11%. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness. And so they grade on a scale, and so the more negative you are, each time you get a little bit more negative, it's like 11% increased risk of having a heart attack. Well, that's good to know. Who knows? Maybe in your mind right now you're going, oh my goodness, I'm not going to complain anymore. I'm going to treat older people with respect and love. Now listen to this right here. What if you flip the whole thing around and say, well, what if an individual's stereotypes increases in positivity toward the elderly, meaning, you know what, I've got a lot to learn from them. They've got so much wisdom. I got a buddy of mine, I heard him make this comment. He said, I like it when so-and-so, he's referring to an older man at church, he said, I like it when he teaches class. I like it when he leads prayers, because they have so much to offer. You know, quite often, if you adjust your attitude properly, you can learn so, so much. And you talk about all the ways you can benefit. Just talking to older people, it's just so much fun. Okay, so here it is. I'm sorry I got distracted. Conversely, if an individual's age stereotypes increased in positivity, you know what I mean by that? You're more positive toward the elderly. If you increase by two standard deviations on this age stereotype scale, This would lead to an 80% reduction in the risk of experiencing a cardiovascular event. Now, you tell me, what drug does that? You know what you got to do here. Here's the rule or the message. Do everything without arguing and complaining, that you may become blameless and pure. Because if you don't, you're going to die of a stroke and a heart attack. You got that? So what you do is, you set your mind starting today, unless you do it already. Never say anything bad. Don't complain about other people. Don't say anything bad about others. You got that? Okay. There's a scientific proof right there. And of course, like I read to you, the researchers, they do not have the foggiest reason why that people that complain are dying of strokes and heart attacks. Well, you and I know different, don't we? Okay. Here's the next one right here. And this one, again, I'm reading these studies to you to try to answer some questions that people have asked me. So, this study is, where did I get this? Some of this stuff is so comical and funny. This comes from the Journal of Peer Review Social and Psychological, 2002, August, volume 83. Okay, here we go. The title of the article is Longevity Increased by Positive Self-Perceptions of Aging. Oh, what are they saying here? They're saying the age you are likely to reach doesn't just depend only on your genetic code or your genome or your lifestyle. How you feel about aging is also a determining factor in the age you're likely to reach. According to an article by epidemiologists over 10 years ago in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, that's a different one, but it's related to the same topic. If you approach your golden years calmly, you'll live 7 years longer than if you dread impending old age. Okay. According to the not entirely uncontroversial positive psychology, it's a known fact that a positive attitude can extend your lifespan. But at the turn of the 21st century, a researcher by the name of Becca Levy and Martin Slade, they could only find one study on the relationship between lifespan and how you regard your impending old age. That means how positive you are. And where was the study done? It was done in Germany, 1999. It's called Journal of Gerontology, Psychological, Social Sciences, something like that. I can't keep up with all the journal names. Okay, here it is right here. In that study, the researchers followed 516 people. And to be in the study, you had to be somewhere between 70 years of age and, guess what, 103. So you could enroll in this study, and the researchers would evaluate you and your responses as long as you were 70 to 103. Well, I would say if you make it to 70, you would qualify as maybe being at the beginnings of being elderly. Okay. You can argue with that. I'm not going to argue back. You're probably right. You know what, every so often I do see people in their 80s, they're just phenomenal. And they always have the same qualities, they're so positive. Anyway, they discovered that the psychological factors did play a role in determining the age that these participants in the study actually reached. I want to see the chart on the one that's 103. And unexpectedly, they didn't expect this, strong factor was how discontent the participants were about the effects of aging. Okay? That's what they measured. And so the less content they were, the earlier they died. There you go. The researchers maintained, however, that the less content you were, the earlier that you're going to die, okay? The researchers maintained, however, that the dissatisfaction was a consequence of the aging process, not the cause. I wonder if it's that way. Okay. Now, the American researchers, on the other hand, they had a different take on this. They suspected that the perception of aging may well be a determining factor in lifespan. And that's what they're talking about, attitude. And they decided to investigate this by using data gathered in the Ohio Longitudinal Study of Aging and Retirement Study. I know that's a long one. In this study, done in the 1970s, they took 660 people. And in order to be in the study, you had to be over 50 years of age when you were surveyed. Okay, these are some of the sample questions that were asked. Just listen to these. The participants were asked, among other things, to what extent they agreed with a statement such as, here's the first one, things keep getting worse as I get older. Okay, do you agree strongly or do you disagree strongly? Here's another question. I have as much pep as I did last year. Another one. As you get older, you are less useful. Do you agree or disagree? Another question. I am as happy now as I was when I was younger, and as I get older, things are better as I thought they would be. All right. On the basis of the answers, the researchers divided the participants into two groups. One, the first group, a strongly positive self-perception of aging. That means they had a pretty positive outlook. And number two, those that had the less strongly positive perception of aging. So one was high positivity, one was very, very low. Here's the results right here. The researchers followed these participants for 23 years. To me, that sounds like a pretty fair length of time. And they recorded when any of them died. And so I'm looking at the graph right here. And so on one side of the graph, you know, up and down, to the far left, survival probability. And then the other one is years since the baseline interview. And so what they're looking at is they want to find out what happens here. And you can't read the graph, but those that were extremely strongly positive about their self-perception of aging, they only lived 7 years longer than those that did not. But if you saw the graph I'm looking at, you would probably come up with a conclusion like, oh my word, it pays to be very, very positive. And well, here's what the graph says. If you were looking at the graph like I am, it says a positive attitude towards your own aging can add more than 7 years to your lifespan. You know what? What if the conditions are right for the body to be productive and to have a longer life where you can be very useful and you can honor God and glorify Him? Well, that sounds good to me. You know what? What if they discovered that there was a new type of a viral infection that would take on average 7 years off your life? Wouldn't people be jumping up and down? When are you going to develop a vaccine for that? When is there going to be a drug? And there would be such fear, but nobody ever thinks about stuff like, well, I'm not saying, let me retract that. It's not part of our, it's not in the forefront of our mind. You just don't think about it. But the point is, what you think about in your heart, in your mind, it has everything to do with how long you're going to be blessed with a great life here on earth. You could probably sum it up and say, is giving thanks important? Oh, yeah. It might add 7 years to your life. How about gratitude? Yeah. It might add 7 years to your life. What about participating in more arguing and complaining about everything? Well, maybe, just maybe, that'll take an average of 7 years off your life. That does not sound good to me. Okay. This program is called Health Essentials. Here's the last one right here, and then I'll start taking phone calls. And if you haven't heard this stuff, well, you need to be exposed to it. You got to remember the ball's in your court. You have a very powerful gift that God's given you. It's called choice or free will. You have 100% choice in what you do with your time. If you ask me, is it easy to waste time? Oh my, yes, it is. I was telling Jimmy yesterday that I think I spent 30 minutes in the morning going, okay, what did I actually accomplish or do that I was wanting to do? The answer was I didn't do anything. But anyway, I think it was good for me to have that conversation because I don't want to just waste time, especially when I've got work to do. Okay, here we go right here. This comes from, gerontology and biological medicine of science, not 2006. Okay, so not 20 years old, but what, 17, give or take. Anyway, here we go. The title is Aging Shrinks Your Brains. You know what that means? As you get older, your brain is prone to shrinking. Well, you're probably asking the question, is there anything that you can do? Well, in the article it says cardio makes them grow, makes the brain grow. After the age of 30, your brain starts to shrink. This process starts very, very slowly, but as you get older, the rate at which this happens starts to rise. And if you live long enough, dementia is inevitable, or so you might think. Psychologists at the University of Pittsburgh discovered that if you can reverse the brain's decline, and how would you do that? By running 3 times a week for 40 minutes. Okay? And I understand, as soon as I say this about the study on running, not everybody can run. They have a legitimate orthopedic condition, whether it's related to a toe, the arch of the foot, the ankle, the leg, the knee, the hip, you just keep going and going. Some people, they have a legitimate reason why they can't go for a run or even a walk. So in that case, you might have to do something different, like ride a recumbent bicycle or do something where you can get after it for 40 minutes. Okay. One of the most crucial organs in the brain is called the hippocampus. It's right there at the base and center of the brain. And so basically, the better that this organ functions, the better your memory. In a 60-year-old individual, I'm not naming anybody's names, it's close to 60. That would not be nice. In a 60-year-old hippocampus, or in a 60-year-old's brain, the hippocampus shrinks an average of 1 to 2% a year. You know what? On one level, that does sound alarming. And it is, but neurologists regard this as the inevitable consequences of aging. They're saying there's nothing you can do to stop it. Well, let's take a different look at this. There are indications that exercise can delay, stop, and maybe even reverse this process of your hippocampus shrinking. And by the way, sorry, I meant to say this earlier. How do they determine if somebody has a condition called Alzheimer's or dementia? Well, they do an MRI of the brain. And specifically, the radiologist and the neurologist or the neurosurgeon, they look at the size of the hippocampus. If your hippocampus has shrunk, or maybe I should say atrophied by about a percentage or so, they would say, bingo, this hippocampus is 20% smaller than other people the same age, therefore they have Alzheimer's and dementia. But what I'm talking about is, what can you do right now to try to bulk up your hippocampus so you can preserve the performance of your mind and your memory and your cognition longer? Okay. So here's a study right here. If you can get elderly people to run for an hour at 70% of their maximal heart rate, 3 times a week, their brain volume will have increased after 6 months. Oh, so you're telling me that if you run 3 times a week for about an hour, after 6 months, the hippocampus is actually growing and reversing its decline? The answer is yes. Here's another one. This comes from the Cochrane database. The reviews suggest that cardio training helps the brains of healthy older people to function better. Or maybe it's not running so much. Maybe it's walking briskly. Something that you can do. Okay, here's a study. The researchers did an experiment with 120 healthy men and women, average age 66. Okay. Is that like middle age, 66? Half of the test subjects, they did stretch exercises 3 times a week for a year, and the other half, they ran for 40 minutes 3 times a week at about 60 to 75% of what's called their VO2 max, okay? And if you're wondering, that's kind of a pace while you're running that it's nearly impossible to hold a conversation. I mean, you might say a few words, but not long flowing sentences because you need the air to breathe with to fuel your muscles, not to talk. Okay, the volume of the hippocampus of the subjects that did stretching exercises, they decreased during the course of the experiment. I think you get what I'm saying here, that if all you do is stretch, well, your hippocampus is going to get smaller. Now, the opposite happened in the subjects that ran. It says the volume of the hippocampus increased by 2% in these subjects. Okay? So instead of, you got to remember here, all the studies show that your hippocampus shrinks by 1 to 2% per year after the age of 60. But in the people that ran, it didn't do that. It increased by 2%. Okay, the researchers also figured out how the training caused the hippocampus to grow. Running boosted the production of brain-derived neurotrophic factor. That's called BDNF for short. They say that BDNF has approximately the same effect on the brain as anabolic steroids have on the muscle tissue. If you want your brain to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger, never mind. Let's go back to this right here. Lastly, the researchers got their subjects to actually do memory tests. They wanted to find out, okay, we can see that the hippocampus is actually growing by 2%, which is impressive, but we're going to give you a test, and guess what happened? The more the hippocampus had grown, every single time their brain or their memory scores got better. Isn't that interesting? So you could probably say, does brain-derived neurotrophic factor, does it do anything to help the brain to repair itself? Yes. The answer is yes. That's one of the reasons why work is so essential. You could basically say when you stop working, you die. It's probably true. Mm-hmm. This whole business about retiring when you're really young and you have all this money, well, what are you going to do? What's the purpose? How are you going to be useful? Anyway, if you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open, and I'll take a phone call. 903-586-5257. Please call me, ask whatever questions that you may have, and we'll go from there. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Dr. Roy. I just wanted to call and talk to you about my oldest son who lost his brother. And he has recently had a MRI that shows a lot of little black dots, and the doctor that ordered the MRI has put him on a blood thinner, and it's he needs something I think besides blood thinner, and I had mentioned to him that you had helped his mother by giving some things that made the blood vessels more prone to dissolve those little things, and I would like to just hang up and let you tell what you think would be good for him.
Okay. I'll take it in a couple of different directions, all right?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I sure am sorry for the loss of your son and for your son's brother. I think the boys might be twins. That's a pretty sad deal. Okay. Let me give you three or four ideas right here. Okay. And I don't know that I really have to go in order? I don't really feel compelled that I have to be perfect. You do know that as human beings that none of us are perfect, don't you? Well, I'm no different. And so if you did an MRI and you saw these black spots in there, you just have to wonder, are you getting small microvascular clots? Or I might say a different way, are you actually getting holes in the brain? And let me go off on one or two areas right here. In the past, I've read about different chemicals that have been shown to have such an adverse effect upon the brain. So, for example, one of them would be, have you ever heard the term NutraSweet or aspartame? And then there's a sweetener called Splenda. It's actually made from sugar, but they don't tell you there's like 30-some-odd chemical steps they have to take in a laboratory just to attach a molecule of chlorine. And bingo, what do you have? You've got holes in the brain. And so all I'm suggesting is the study after study demonstrates very clearly that if you consume artificial sweeteners, you're asking for this slow, insidious process that's going to actually damage your brain. Now, I'm not saying that's the case with this young man, but I just want you to be aware of that there's some things that are toxic to the brain. So whether that's consuming foods or diet soft drinks, that would be one example, or any type of diet foods, you're just asking for it. There's not one study I've ever read that if you drink a diet Dr. Pepper, your health becomes better. Mm-mm. It doesn't exist. But you've got to allow people to make choices. For all I know, I'm around people without even realizing it. They have a diet Dr. Pepper addiction, and no one's ever told them that they're doing self-harm. Anyway, enough of that topic. There's another chemical called monosodium glutamate. Yeah, that would be a chemical that I've seen over and over again damage the brain. And so maybe one of the points I'm getting to is, if an MRI has been done of the brain and there's these little black dots everywhere, you just have to ask yourself the question, what are the conditions in the person's life that would lead to the development of those black dots or holes in the brain? Well, you know, diet has so much to do with the brain. So this is just my thought. One of the substances that I think is phenomenal for helping both the quality of blood flow in the body and also feeding and nourishing the brain, that is called cod liver oil. It's actually one of the greatest super-duper remedies of all time to help strengthen. Actually, I could probably call it a superfood, and that would be totally correct. So what you got to do is, if there's an organ with a problem, it would be so wise just to feed it and nourish it. What if the person suffers from dehydration? What's the solution? Let me see. Is it giving them Diet Coke? Would you like to give them like several beers a day? Do they need to drink whiskey at every turn? How about diet Lipton tea? Do they need that? Do they need more milkshakes? No, they need water. Why does that have to be such a difficult proposition that if you're dehydrated, water is what your body's requiring? And so how would you get water? I know I'm covering this because some people don't know. When you eat food that has a high water content, that goes a long way toward correcting dehydration. So you could actually eat watermelon or apples or grapes. Or if you need something sweet, it might be called a bowl of blueberries or cherries. strawberries, stuff like that. Does that make sense? And so when you eat a lot of processed food that's high in starches and genetically modified grains, you're kind of sucking the water out of your body. Yeah, you are. So drinking water is good. Some people need to add some minerals to it to help the water go efficiently into the cells. And that may be just as simple as putting a pinch of Redmond salt into the bottle of water they're drinking to give their body a chance to get the water into the cells so they can be properly hydrated. Okay? Herbal teas go such a long way to helping with hydration. Plus, they taste so good. Have you ever heard of green tea or rosehips tea or dandelion root tea or one of my favorites, hibiscus or licorice root? All those count as to restoring the water levels of your body. And so when it comes to the brain, you have to create the right circumstances to help it to heal. So that means eating real food that God has made. You know, you might have to be a multimillionaire to afford eggs these days, but eggs would be good brain food. Actually, the yolk of an egg, it has so many of the B vitamin compounds that your brain needs for optimal function. So cod liver oil, eggs, eating fish with some regularity. Don't you think it'd be a good plan to have salmon once a week? Yeah, absolutely. What about eating a salad every day if you had black dots in the brain? That would be a good call. The other one is you've just got to increase the level of blood flow and nutrition delivery to the brain. That's called exercise. So just like the study that I just read about the older people exercised for 40 minutes three times a week, it was called running or jogging, and guess what happened? Their brain began to grow and repair itself because it increases the production of brain-derived neurotrophic factor. That stuff, by a lot of neurologists, they call that stuff miracle grow for the brain. If you had your garden that was looking pitiful and it just wasn't producing and the growth was anemic and sluggish, you might put some miracle grow or, you know, some fish emulsion. I have some plants in my office that I put fish emulsion on. Dude, they like it. You know how I know? They say thank you to me every day. Maybe if you would be there at 7:45 when I got to work, you'd hear the plants talking too. It's like I walk in the door with the sun coming in the window. Maybe not this week, but today it'd be true. They say, thank you very much, Dr. Morgan. We love that fish emulsion. Anyway, so you've got to feed the body to repair it. Now, I'm not telling you to do this, but it's hard for me to overlook an herb called hawthorn. I know that they put him on blood thinners, so you've got to always check with your doctor. And, of course, I already know what the answer is going to be for anything that's natural. The answer is N-O, as in no. Do not do that. I'll let you decide. But you might want to come up with a plan to rejuvenate the nervous system and the brain. If you don't, it's just going to be a merry-go-round of endless... I would just prefer rejuvenation. How about that? So let's angle toward healing and repair. So if you want the brain to function better, what should you do? Exercise every single day as if your life depends on it, because it does. Can you afford to take off? Sure. If you want to get worse, don't do anything. So daily exercise is going to be critical. What you should do is just go ahead and test your brain right now. Stand on one foot. Raise the opposite leg as high as you can. Just flex your knee up toward your chest. Hold it there and close your eyes. Stand on the one foot and turn your head while your eyes are closed all the way to the left, and then go all the way to the right. Keep going back and forth. If you can maintain your balance for 1 minute, then you have good brain function. But if you can't, then we need to start growing some new brain cells and neurons and establish better plasticity and neural connections. And so, practice balancing. Go for a walk every day. Go for a jog. Start training your body. That's the one way that you'll get the brain to grow. The next one is read, and study. Take notes. Write things down. if you would be willing to take, and you know, do you even know how many people that I've seen over the years that have had Alzheimer's? And I'll ask the question, do you like to read? And they'll say, yes. And I'll say, what are you reading right now? Oh, I haven't read in years, but I used to. Well, there's a reason why. And what you have to do is, through faith and by faith, you've got to be willing to start taking better care of yourself, which means you need to start reading. You've got to give your brain a reason to grow some new neurons so they can start serving you better and working better. Does that make sense? Okay. The other thing is, it's been well established. If you will write a little bit every day, take your pencil, take a sheet of paper, or maybe some people, probably more so women than men, they will journal. I kind of have my own system where I use index cards. That's just what I like, because I want to just fill up the front and back, and that way I feel like I've done something. But if you'll start writing every day, you're exercising your brain. Could you imagine what's going to happen to the world when you say, Siri, could you make some scrambled eggs for me? Well, it's just borderline ridiculous. Do you know why people that keep working live? Well, it's because they keep telling their body, I need you to keep working properly for me. That's one reason. You know, the oldest lived woman in North America or the United States, I want to say her name was Bessie. She died about a month ago. And when they interviewed her, they said, what's your secret for old age? How'd you get to be this old? And she said, number one, I work hard every day. And so there you go. That's her top recommendation, hard work. Now, this was just her talking, but the second thing she said was, I don't go to doctors. Anyway, I'm not going to make a comment about that, but what she's saying is, I am choosing to work hard to keep my body in good working order, and then I want to be my very own best advocate. And I think a third one, she says, I allow myself to indulge in sweets. But let me qualify that. She's not saying she eats sweets nonstop all day long. No, no, no. What she said was, she made the comment, if I go to a birthday party, you know, on a Saturday, I let myself have a piece of cake and I don't feel guilty about it. But what she's talking about is self-discipline or self-control. She would limit herself to having sweets once a week. I mean, there's no law against that. Now, some people, they have completely cut out all sugar whatsoever, and that's most respectable. That's the way it should be, probably, or we should just have it sparingly. But to me, when she said that she allows herself to indulge in a sweet once a week, I thought, there's a woman of self-control. And if I'm not mistaken, maybe she was 113, 114, 115. Here's what I think. I think the young man that has the black dots in his brain on the MRI, needs to say, okay, what is my life all about? How am I feeding myself every day? Am I eating anything that might be causing this problem? You know, the other thing that he just needs to do, and I don't have his lab work in front of me, but I mean, I'm sure he's a very intelligent man. But if we looked at his lab tests, the studies show that if your HCT, sometimes it's called the hematocrit, when that is above, you know, 42, your blood becomes increasingly thicker. And I'm trying to think if I can remember the studies correctly. One study said that if your hematocrit, which is just a normal test called a complete blood count, or sometimes it's called a CBC with differential, it's just a standard test. I remember when I first came to Jacksonville, I could get the hospital to do one for like $3. $3. Now that's not the case. But I'm just saying, it used to be very readily, cheaply available. And really, it's not that expensive, but a CBC with differential, this gives you a view right into the quality of the blood. And if the blood is its own unique organ system, well, the life is in the blood. And so if his hematocrit is not 42 or below, then I would say there's a good chance that he might have blood that's a little bit too thick, thus the blood thinner. So the way that you get to the root cause of that is you start donating blood. Okay, it's not like a man has a monthly menstrual cycle during the fertility years. where he can let go of some of the extra, let's just say, blood and associated elements found in the blood. And so if he just relies on a blood thinner, I don't really know how that's going to work out. I mean, I'm not the most confident person just because I've read so many studies on him. But I think taking charge of your health is a good start. But donating blood might be a good thing for him to look into. Anyway, if somebody wants to call me and ask me a question, please feel free to do so. This program is called Health Essentials. My name is Roy Morgan. I think I've done this since 1996. You can tell I'm not the most trained professional. My name is not Randy. That guy practices every day. He's awesome. Okay, the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. So what I would say is have your son do a home test. Stand on one foot with the other leg raised. Do both sides, not at the same time. And if you can stand with your eyes closed on one leg for 1 minute, I'd say the brain's pretty good. Does that make sense? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have a couple of questions. And the first one I have is, well, let me tell you, my daughter and my husband both have ingrown toenails that are very painful. What can I do to prevent those or get rid of those, or what would you suggest about ingrown toenails?
Okay, there's a mineral or an element in nature called magnesium.
Okay.
So usually, a lot of times, I just kind of cut to the chase, and what I'll do is I'll combine essential fatty acids, and cod liver oil is probably the best one that I know of. It's been used long-term, and so when they distill the oil out of the cod's liver, you know, they live in the Arctic Ocean. I hear it's cold up there.
Mm-hmm.
But with essential fatty acid deficiency and magnesium deficiency, the toes just tend to grow inward. It's very painful. So what this may point to is they just don't have enough essential fatty acids or magnesium.
Okay.
And so what you could do is you could just give them cod liver oil every day, or they could take it themselves and take magnesium and see if the structure or the anatomy of the toenail begins to structurally change for the better.
Okay.
Right. The other one is it's when people don't walk barefoot, you're going to get ingrown toenails.
Okay.
And so one of
I've
the ways...
I heard you said that before, so...
Well, and can I give you some reasonable ideas? It may be they just choose one day a week where they say, I'm not wearing any shoes today, the socks are coming off, even though it's cold, I'm just going to walk barefoot throughout the house. If I go to town, I'm going to go barefoot. It'd probably look weird, wouldn't
mm-hmm.
it? When I go to church tomorrow, I'm going to go barefoot. So
you
walking...
That.
What'd you say?
Last Saturday. Yeah, you were talking about that last Saturday, I heard you, and I have neuropathy, so I started walking barefoot last Saturday. I thought, okay, today it's cold, but it's here it goes.
Hey, you know what? I'm really proud of you. But here's what should happen. If you have a neuropathy, you've got to come to terms with it's going to hurt worse before it gets better. Because that's okay. What happens when you start regrowing, rejuvenating nerves. Now, mm-hmm. let's just say you don't want to do any of that. You just want to go for laser treatments every year the rest of your life and take drugs. Sure.
No.
You got an extra $5,000 you want to blow? That's fine. Or you could just walk barefoot. And you know what? I'm really trying to make your toes and your feet and your arch be uncomfortable. Because when you're uncomfortable, that's when your body grows.
Okay. The next thing I want to talk to you about is I have, and it's just recently, it's really weird. I go to sleep at night, and on my left hand, my pointer finger gets stuck in the bent position. And when I wake up, I have to move it back up with my right hand.
Is that the finger you put on the trigger of your rifle? It is, isn't it?
No.
Well, one thing that happens is if a human being is deficient in an element called iodine, you're more prone to what's called a Dupuytren's contracture or a trigger finger. I'm just kind of being funny about the trigger finger, but the tendons start to develop adhesions and scar tissue, and you don't want that to happen, I promise you. So iodine would be one of the ways that you try to correct this. And if I'm not mistaken, years ago, I came across a study, and I can't remember the details now, which that's not the first time that's happened to me. Coconut oil. So rubbing and massaging, you could probably just ask your husband to rub and massage your point your finger with coconut oil every day.
Okay.
He's got nothing better to do at bedtime anyway, does he?
That's right.
Hi, sweetheart. I love you. Let me rub your finger for 2 minutes. Good night.
Yeah. Okay, that's easy enough. Well, thank you. Okay, you have a good day.
All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, if you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line. Well, I thought I pushed the button. There we go. There's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. Can we talk more about neuropathy just for a moment until we get another phone call? You have to understand the conditions are right for the nerves to die and the blood vessels to die. We've got to come to terms with that. So what do you do to grow them? Well, you've got to put some stress on the foot. I don't want to hear any more of this nonsense that you need to sit in a recliner the rest of your life. That's a recipe for disaster. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today, sir?
Better than I ought to be. You know, I've been to see you several times, and the last couple of times you've taken me off that sugar stuff that you were talking about, the sugar in the water, the stevia, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm feeling so much better. I just wanted to report that you're doing great on that. And
well, can I ask you a question real quick?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I think one thing that I may have told you, like in the past, like in probably months or a year ago, that stevia may be hard on the kidneys and it may cause crystals to accumulate. They're called calcium oxalate or oxalate crystals. And the more of those that build up, you tend to have more aches and pains. Was that true with you?
I don't know.
Well, and that's what I was going to get to. Do you feel any more limber or spry than what you used to?
I'm getting older.
Well,
I still walk and jog 2+ miles a day, and from what you said today, I've got to raise that up because it's about 45 minutes.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. And that was that study where they did it for 40 minutes, 3 times a week.
Yes. You took me off these sugar drinks, that have that bad stuff in there. And what I wanted to report to you is that my mental cognition is much better now. I still forget things, but, it's not as much.
Good job. I love it.
You know, and thank you very much.
You're sure welcome.
It's soon going to be gardening time. What plants would you suggest we put in the garden to have much better food?
Kale.
Okay. And I've got that right now, and it hasn't died because of the freezes. But I've got more planted in pots inside to go out.
You mean your kale survived the 8, 9, 10 degree temperatures?
It did.
Oh my goodness! What did you get? Did you get bionic kale? What's the name of it?
I don't know.
Have you ever tried to your hand at planting blueberry bushes or shrubs?
I've got some blackberries, but no blueberries.
Well, the blackberries are really good. Blueberries are really, really nutrient dense, especially when it comes to rejuvenation of the mind and the brain. So if you went to a nursery today and they had like a 1 or 2 gallon pot with the blueberries, that might be like a really good project for you.
Amen. And because you've talked about it so much, I have a handful of blueberries that I buy at the store. I know they're not the best, but
no complaints from me. You're doing it.
I've had 3 or 4 handfuls a day, and eat that all the time. I really like what you say.
Oh, good job!
I thank you for it. You're doing us a great job.
Hang on 1 second. I have to write this down. I like what Dr. Morgan says, and I'm following his directions. That's a good one.
Amen. Amen.
Because I never hear the other where somebody says, you know, I don't like what you're telling me.
but I'm still trying to lose weight in getting off that sugary drink. I lost about 8 pounds, and I need to lose about 15 or 20 more pounds. Any suggestions there?
Well, last week, and this is only just an idea because it was fresh on my mind, but last week I was looking at a study where they gave people an amino acid called L-tryptophan. I'm sorry, 5-HTP. I botched it right there, but it's really, it's angling toward the same thing. So they, in this study, they gave individuals 750 milligrams of an amino acid called 5-HTP, and that's just the short version for the number 5 or the numeral 5 and then the word hydroxytryptophan, 5-HTP. And in every one of those, they lost weight. It was very, very significant.
And where do we get that 5-HTP from?
Well, you might look at the health food store, or you may look online to see if you can find it. But specifically, the dose they used was 750 milligrams, but it all resulted in weight loss.
Okay.
And what happened was they ate about, when they would take that, they would consume about 420 kilocalories less every day when they took it, meaning if you took that, you were more satiated and you were more satisfied, so you didn't feel like, man, I can't take it. I've got to eat like 3 whole bags of Chips Ahoy cookies or something like that. Have you ever heard of people doing that?
Amen.
That's when a woman told me years ago, she says, Dr. Morgan, I have a problem. I like to eat Oreo cookies. I said, well, how many do you eat? And she said, 1 or 2 bags. I'm going, okay, I think I understand. Yeah, one cookie is not going to do that. But what is the ad that says nobody can eat just one? Anyway.
Okay. Another thing I'd like to hear from you is I'm planning on coming to see you soon, but I'd like to get the blood tests. Maybe you could tell us what the blood tests are, and I'm not going to write them down now, but I will listen to the podcast to pick it up.
Well, that's what I'll do then. I'll do it right now.
And for everybody else that does walking, they might do like me and listen to a podcast while they're walking. I do it every day.
You know what? That's a good idea. I like it.
I'm back to 2017 right now. And they're still good back then.
Well, thank you very much. You're very kind. Well, I'll tell you what the blood tests are, okay?
Okay. Thank you, and I'll get off the line so that someone else can call in.
Thank you, sir.
God bless you. Bye bye.
All right, I appreciate that. Here's some of the blood tests that might be a good idea to request. Number one, request a ferritin test. F-E-R-R-T-I-N. A CBC with differential. That stands for complete blood count with differential. Then the next one, the third one, is comprehensive metabolic panel. Okay? Next one would be a lipid profile. I would have them include what's called VLDL. That stands for very low density lipoprotein. Another one that could be very beneficial could be easily called homocysteine. That's a great marker. And then if it were me, if you like the idea of measuring vitamins, then measuring vitamin B12 and vitamin D3. And those are just some of the basic simple ones. But if you can get those, you can cover a lot of ground. I'm very, very acquainted with the idea that a person says their blood test is normal because the doctor or the nurse said it was. But then when you actually look at the results, they're far from normal, meaning they have red flags, or some of them are high or low. But anyway, the point is they're out of balance, and that means something. So what can we learn by, say, measuring kidney function? So if it says that your GFR is at 69, that means you have had significant damage to the kidneys, you're close to kidney failure, and it has no bearing whether your doctor says anything about it or not. It is what it is. It's like when the engine light comes on saying your engine's about to blow up. Who cares if your mechanic didn't warn you about that when you took it to the shop? It still is going to blow up if you don't pay attention to it. Anyway, I've enjoyed being with you today. You're listening to Health Essentials on KBGS FM 90.3 Jacksonville, Tyler Longview.